based upon various other prophecies, could be lengthened or shortened based upon how much men cooperate. You know, if they're good, it'll be lengthened. If they're bad, it'll be shortened. Which is, I guess, almost a childish way of saying it. But that's
it's probably accurate. I think a good example of that is everyone remembers the message of Fatima with the warning of, you know, some terrible chastisement and souls falling to hell. People remember the Hollywood stuff, we'll say. The stuff that, well, I would say the Hollywood stuff, but I was not a fan of that movie, the recent Fatima movie. I was a little surprised to see how few souls were depicted in hell, in the hell scene.
Oh, but I never saw it, so I've heard mixed reviews, mostly bad.
It was not a lot of repentance in that movie.
Oh, goodness.
Actually, pretty decent depiction of the Freemasons, though. I was surprised at that, but not a fan of that movie. But people forget about one of the requests of Our Lady at Fatima, which was the keeping of the five First Saturdays devotion. It's part of the Fatima message. Hmm. How many parishes have a First Saturday Mass?
Yeah.
Not many. Very few. And it's usually traditional Latin Mass communities, whether it's an SSPX chapel or a FSSP or Institute of Christ the King or whatever, they're usually the ones having a First Saturday Mass. And even then, their Mass attendance looks not too indifferent from the daily Masses that they would have.
So you're saying we're not doing what Our Lady called for, that at Fatima, it's not just a message to the Pope and the bishops. It's also the message to the rest of us that we have to do penance and make reparation, and the Five First Saturdays is a way of making reparation.
I don't think we're getting the consecration of Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary until you have a fair number of faithful keeping the Five First Saturdays devotion.
Yeah.
That's my suspicion.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it sort of fits in right there with, you know, you get the leaders you deserve kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we have then this distinction between the fifth age and then edging off into the sixth age. Now, what comes between the two would seem to be this age of chastisement. And you, one thing I like about your channel is you're not just giving your own opinions, but mostly you're relying heavily on these official messages. And for the listeners, Dr. Stein will sit here and read an entire text into his computer and record it and upload it. Encyclicals and letters of Archbishop Vigano and things like that. But you rely very heavily on the actual messages, which you just sort of read from one to the other, to the other, to the other. And I notice in some of these messages that describe the chastisement, it's described in absolutely brutal terms. Paris will be destroyed. I wrote that one down as I was listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have a hard time keeping some of these messages separate, though, because they all sound the same.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, the giveaway of the gravity of what we're talking about is people are not making this stuff up. Although, on the flip side of that, it would also probably not be that hard to fake an apparition or fake this kind of thing. All you'd have to do is, this is why I wish they bring an inquisitor back, if only for these sorts of events, right? I don't think we'd be dealing with Medjugorje if there was a formal Vatican inquisitor whose job was to go and really in a hard line way investigate these kind of messages. But they all run together. It's why, and usually that one will fill in the missing pieces for another one. This is one of the reasons why I like, if you want to call it that, the message of Alois Erlmeyer, the German peasant who was a dowser. And when I mentioned he was a dowser, people got mad. They're like, oh, that's witchcraft. That's not what the Vatican said.
No, the church actually approved of water dousing.
They did, as long as the dowser, when asked where the gift came from, attributed it to heaven. If that was where it came from, then the church was fine with it. And Alois Erlmeyer had a vision of Our Lady. And then he had dousing right afterwards. So he said it's from her. That's fine. He had he was living in the era of World War II and a little bit after, and a lot of people said he was having nightmares about the war. Well, he had part of his visions were of like China invading the United States, which sounds insane, except for that would have sounded insane 2 years ago. Doesn't sound as insane now, especially with, like, did you hear that the Chinese were playing war games in Canada?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Their Navy was sitting off the Canadian coast. I mean, that stuff doesn't sound as insane anymore. He described a Russian invasion of Europe that would go all the way to Italy, that some of the some of their military would be stopped in Germany, but the red flag of communism will fly over it, over St. Peter's. And he describes vivid details, like yellow powder being used by the American military in Europe to stop the Russian advancement, that anything that touched it died, and nothing could touch the area it was sprayed on for like a year safely. You know, very strange details that don't sound like World War II to me.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yet there are other prophecies that you cite, and again, just like you, these things tend to run into each other with me. I think it may have been Marie-Julie Jehenny or Elizabeth Kanori Mora who said that the Russians would advance through mainland Europe and get to Italy, and then there would be basically a conversion at that point, and the Russians would convert.
I have my suspicions about what that's going to be. My suspicion is that the Vatican is going to – that this will happen probably while the Vatican is having one of its many pointless synods, except that you will probably have, because of the declining situation, either a pope who is elected who is a quote-unquote moderate, or you're going to have a pope who has a radical interior conversion away from modernism. And either case, my suspicion is they're going to tell the hierarchy who are there that they are going to consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart. And then the next thing that I'm curious about is how many of them say yes or say no. Because if one way for a pope to handle this, if the next pope comes in and says, demands everybody do it, that they are automatically excommunicated if they don't, and that they will have like a live stream to the Vatican where they can be watched doing the consecration.
Yeah, hundreds of live streams in multiple languages, yeah.
Right. You know, all the seminarians in Rome are busy, you know, that day making sure. But if they refuse, they're ipso facto excommunicated, which means they're no longer in communion with the pope.
Yeah.
It also makes me wonder if you have, you know, all of them say no, and then except for like three or four reasonably Orthodox bishops who are then the only bishops in the world in communion with the Pope, and most of them die, except for maybe two who help rebuild the church afterwards when the Russians come in. Although I'm not a believer in the message we received from the Vatican in 2000, I actually, the more I look at that, the less I think that that's actually not, that that has anything to do with Fatima.
Okay, so you think that the vision message, for want of a better term, that was published in 2000 is not legit at all?
I have become less and less convinced that it is, because I've read the prophecy of Pope St. Pius X, and it's almost verbatim the same.
About one of his successors walking out of Rome over the dead bodies of cardinals?
Yes. Now, the counter-argument is, well, of course it's almost the same. He was given the third secret of Fatima, not knowing what it was, and he documented it as a failsafe. And that could be the case, but I tend to be more and more of the mind that the third secret of Fatima is warning of ecclesiastical Freemasonry and the great apostasy and the consequences of a disastrous council. That was the launching of all that, which then leads into a material chastisement, because what happens when the Catholic faith isn't preached in the world anymore? What happens when the church isn't the lone voice of reason in the world that still has moral authority? Mm-hmm. What happens when all that when all that goes away?
Chaos. You point out in one of the videos that I was listening today, you said, since there is no salvation outside the church, it is such a scandal that the church has fallen to this low ebb. And I think it was in the context of talking about the prophecies of Marie-Julie Jehenny, who had seen the horrible state of the clergy, what would happen to the clergy, and how there would be all of this terrible corruption in the clergy. I guess Holzhauser had seen it too. I mean, he starts a community of priests to improve the spirituality of priests in his own time, presumably with some success, although they only lasted 100 years and then they folded. Do you think that one of, you know, do you suppose, because you say this about there is no salvation outside the church, and one of the real shockers is that the clergy have fallen to where we are, things are so bad as they are now, and that's just a scandal to those outside the church. It's stopping them from coming into the church because they see all this corruption. Do you think that's part of it, these apparitions, what they're trying to tell us?
I almost certainly believe that. I mean, if you look at the history of Western Christianity around the time of Fatima, you'll notice that you had the World Council of Churches was getting really, really getting started at that time. That was the time that the Anglican Communion was embracing divorce openly and embracing birth control. Mm-hmm. It's the timing of these things in the grander picture is something that often gets overlooked. And I think the ecumenical movement has been an absolute disaster for the church. And this is, I mean, let's look back in time a few days. What happened this past weekend? Pope Francis in Iraq praying at the site of an ancient pagan temple with non-Christians, going on the record saying that it, or one of his bishops saying this was, we're going to start over going back to Abraham. I mean, what does that sound like? That doesn't sound like Catholicism to me.
No. Yeah, there's and there is this push to build this temple that's going to be actually there's one going to be in the Far East or in the Middle East. It's not in Saudi Arabia. I'm forgetting where it is, but it's going to be this sort of house of Abraham where there's going to be.
Oh yes, I know what you mean.
It's going to be in three parts. One's going to be
Abu Dhabi, I believe. It's going to have a mosque, a synagogue, and a Christian church. They never say it's a Catholic church, but I'm going to presume that because the Vatican is funding this, that it's going to be a Catholic church that Protestants are welcome to pray in.
And then there was a recent bit of news about a similar thing in England. There's one building that used to be a Catholic church, go figure, and they're rebranding it as some sort of Abrahamic house of worship. And
Chesterton is smiling at us from the grave at this in a very sad way. Mm. If you're not familiar with his novel, I want to say it's The Flying Inn. The whole thing is almost a political commentary where he prophesizes in a sort of satirical way the rise of something called Chrislam, which is the merger of Christianity and Islam, which, of course, is just Islam conquering the UK. But that's... It's amazing how many times he was right about things.